presentation of Grace Church in Greenville, South Carolina. You're listening to our Courageously Generous series entitled Fear and Freedom. For more information, please visit our website at gracechurchsc.org.
All right. Good morning. This is our 9 o'clock Pelham Road, 11 o'clock Powdersville, and the people are just massively rolling in. Hundreds of churches closed. God's in one place today, right here. All right. Grab your Bibles. Turn to Luke chapter 16. We are going to look at this and see what God does. We'll have a chance to respond in a moment. I mean, a good buddy of mine, Donald Spann, grew up in Charleston, drove in today. If you grew up in Charleston and you drive in the snow, you are a man, right? All right. We've been talking about, for the last few weeks, a series on personal finance. And what we've been saying is that something is wrong. Something is significantly wrong in the way that we think, the way that we feel, the way that we've been living. We're asking questions like, where did it all go? At the end of the month, where did this, one of the few things that I have control over is my money. And we're asking the question, where did it all go? Or we have everything that we sought out to have, but we still have this feeling of discontentment, something deep inside that just doesn't feel right. And so what we're doing is we're saying to our church, we're not asking people in our church to rally their resources and bring it to the church so we can build a building or raise money for something. That's not what we're doing. We're rallying the resources of the church to try to help folks who are attending, who are members, who are in the body at Grace Church. So that's what we're doing. We're seeing that the idea of money is very close to God's heart because it's close to our heart. It's a discipleship issue. That my heart is connected to money. And since God cares about my heart so much, now he's connected to my money. And it's a discipleship issue. And our church, here's what we're saying. Our church is about $35 million in consumer debt. Okay? Not our church took home, but I mean people in our church. Whether it's a credit card bill that where we went to Disney or where we bought this car that we're upside down on. Or medical bills, which we couldn't help. Or school loans that we're still trying to pay back. But we have a tremendous amount of consumer debt, which means that we have a lot of marital conflict over that. We have a lot of sleepless nights. We have a lot of people calling trying to get money from us that we don't have. And so we are going to have to talk about that. Think about that and see what does Jesus want for us in this? We were talking about the issue of fear and freedom. Fear that we're going to miss out, that we're not going to have the status of a friend, of a neighbor, of a family member, of someone else, that we're not going to have their same status. We're not going to have the same enjoyment that they have. We're going to miss out on some security for our future. So we're afraid of all that. We're making decisions based on that kind of fear. And we don't have the kind of freedom that God intended us to have because our hearts are connected to the idols that we're bowing down to. The things that we are sacrificing for, that we're casting our affections on. So here's the thing. Here's the good news is that people in our body are responding. We did this assessment deal where we said, if you would like us to sit down with you for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, do a personal free assessment to kind of help give you all our slots filled up. In fact, we had to extend it into another day, another weekend. So that's really, really great. Here's a couple of questions from our college students and high school students. What does this have to do with me? Okay. Here's what I would say. College student, high school, this has everything to do with you. Because you're going to spend the rest of your life handling your resources, handling money. So you might as well start thinking about that now. How much work do you do? What kind of contribution do you make to your family? How much do you save? How much do you give? How much are you going to spend when you go out on a date? How much are you going to spend at the prom? Okay. Do we still do that? I think we do, right? Or do we just go, mom and dad are going to cover all that. You know, they're going to handle all that. Am I going to be a part of paying for my mission trips? Am I going to help pay for someone else to go on a mission trip? My retreats, do my parents just fund that? Or can I show that I care enough about to put some in it? How much am I going to spend on clothes? Or do I suspect my parents just to handle all that? Spring break for our college students. Are you ready to be married? Are you thinking about financially, I need to get my life in order because I'm getting ready to merge with someone else in the next few years? What is health insurance, life insurance? What's a savings account? These are some questions you're going to need to know. All right. All right. So everybody at Luke 16, did I tell you that? Turn to Luke 16. While you're turning there, I want to show you something from 1 Timothy 6. I just want to read this to you. He says, Paul says this to Timothy, teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud, not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Now, if our culture has found anything out, We found this out in the last 2 years, hadn't we? The question is, how long can we remember that, all right? Their trust should be in God. You're like, well, thank goodness this isn't talking to me because I'm not a rich person. Compared to everybody in the world, you are a rich person. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all things that we need for our enjoyment. Now, here's the part, one of the things that we're missing is that one of the reasons that money's given to us is for enjoyment, which very few of us are doing, all right? Next, let's see, one more, I think. Tell them to use their money to do good, that they should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. By doing this, they will be storing up treasure as a good foundation for their future. You're like, well, okay, so what's he saying here? That they could use their money to store up treasure for the future. A guy asked me a couple weeks ago, he goes, hey, what does it mean for me to have treasures in the future? What would that look like? That's what we want to talk about, all right? And so the thing is, we can't get to all the verses that talk about money because there's so many. But this is what we're going to expound on a little bit. Luke 16. Look at verse 1. Jesus is going to tell a story. And this is one of those parables where this is the most controversial parable for theologians because of how Jesus frames this issue and who comes out to be the hero and who's the bad guy. Luke 16, verse 1. Some of this is going to sound familiar. Jesus told this story to his disciples. There was a certain rich man who had a manager handling his affairs. Okay, so remember this from Matthew 25. There's a rich guy who has a manager. So there's an owner who has a manager who handles his stuff. Okay? All right, so we've seen this before. The difference between owners and being managers. What we're learning is that we thought we were owners, but we're not owners. We're just managers. And so we find ourselves as a manager in the story. One day, a report came to the manager that the manager was wasting his employer's money. He was just scattering it, is the Greek word. Verse 2. So the employer called him in and said, "What is this I hear about you? Get your report in order because you are going to be fired. Your days working for our company are over. You were given a certain responsibility and you have failed in that responsibility. You've been irresponsible. So now I'm going to cut you loose. So what I need you to do is go get all the books, get everything together, bring it into my office. We'll sign some papers and you're going to be out the door." Verse 3. The manager thought to himself, "Now what?" I love that. "Now what? My boss has fired me. I don't have the strength to dig ditches. I feel you. Back's hurt. And I'm too proud to beg." He goes, "I have been upper management and I'm not begging," right? So he's in a tough spot. "I've been fired. I'm not going to go do manual labor and I'm not going to go ask for a handout." So verse 4, he goes, "Ah, I know how to ensure that I'll have plenty of friends who will give me a home when I'm fired." He says, I have a plan. I have an idea. I've got 24 hours left, a limited time left in this job. And so some limited opportunities. And so I'm going to make the most of the limited opportunities in front of me so that when my job is over tomorrow, I'm going to have some people who can help me on the backside. All right. So he goes, "I have a plan. I'm going to create some friends for tomorrow who can help me out." So verse 5. This is where it gets a little sticky for people. They really freaked out when Jesus starts saying this. So he invited each person, and there's a ton of them, but he's just going to give us two. He invited each person who owed money to the employer to come and discuss the situation. And he asked the first one, he goes, "How much do you owe my master?" The man replied, "I owe 800 gallons of olive oil," which is a ton. So the manager told him, "Take your bill and change it to 400 gallons and write me a check right now." Guy says, "That's a pretty good idea. So I don't have the money to pay off 800 gallons right now, but if you're willing to cut my bill into 400 gallons, then I think I will go ahead and pay that off." And then verse 7. And then he says to the next one, "And how much do you owe my employer?" The man asked. He goes, "I owe him 1,000 bushels of wheat." Here's the reply. He said, "Here," the manager said, "take the bill and write 800. So for the first guy, you're getting a 50% discount. For the second guy, you're getting a 20% discount. And so he just wrote him off. Now, the big controversy becomes, did this manager cut the prices in half and stick it to his owner again? Or did he just write off his part of the commission? And so we don't really know. But what makes it so confusing is everybody's like, "What is going to happen to this guy? I mean, Jesus is getting ready to tell us a story about a guy who scatters and sticks it to his manager. And then he goes and writes off part of the prophets again, how Jesus says that man should be killed. But here's what he says. Verse 8, the rich man had to admire this dishonest man, this dishonest rascal, this manager, for being so shrewd. And so for all those who are listening, they're like, no, wait a minute. The guy wasn't doing a good job. Jesus tells that part. So he says, you're going to be fired. So then before he's fired, he calls in some of the biggest accounts, cuts one in half by 50%, cuts another one down by 20%. And so he rips off the master again. And then the master says, look, I mean, you keep sticking it to me, but I got to give you credit. You are smart. I give you that. You're shrewd. You're clever. Well, see, no one wants to validate Jesus saying that. Jesus is not validating the point that he's been crooked. He was already crooked. Jesus is not extolling that. There's a deeper point here. What Jesus is validating is the fact that he's clever, right? And he's getting ready to make a point to us. So this guy's been very clever. And he says the rich man had to admire this dishonest rascal for being so shrewd. Then the next phrase, and here's where Jesus begins to teach us. We step out of the parable. He begins talking to us. And it is true, Jesus says, that the children of this world, like this shrewd manager who's only trying to find a meal for tomorrow. It is true that the children of this world are more shrewd in dealing with the world around them than are the children of light. So his point is not, oh, I'm so glad that guy was dishonest. His point is this dishonest guy showed a cleverness and a shrewdness that people that are of the light, people that are following me, they don't have. So it's true the children of the world are more shrewd in their dealings than we are. He says, my folks, people who are following God, tend to get wagged rather than wagging. They tend to get stuck rather than thinking about things in a clever way. And he goes, here's why. Verse 9, here's the lesson. He says, use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Then when your earthly possessions are gone, they will welcome you into an eternal home. He goes, here's what the shrewd manager did. He ripped somebody off, but what he did was he made friends for tomorrow. So then the next day he showed up at the guys. He goes, hey, dude, remember yesterday when I cut your bill in half? He's like, yeah. He goes, well, I got fired. You got any work I can do? You got a place I can stay for a week till I figure out what I'm going to do. Hey, dude, you cut me a deal yesterday. Come on in. It's that kind of cleverness that Jesus is saying. That's what we need to be thinking about. And it's going to be, he goes, don't think of it in physical terms. Think of it in spiritual terms. Use your worldly resources, which are what? Limited. You're only going to have them for a limited amount of time. Use your worldly resources that you're only going to have for a limited amount of time. Verse 9. Then when your earthly possessions are gone, are they going to go? They are going to go. You're going to go. They will. Who's they? That's the great question, isn't it? Then they will welcome you into an eternal home. He says, use your earthly possessions to have a spiritual impact that will have this far reaching impact on people way into eternity, and that they would welcome you into their earthly homes. In other words, that the way that you used your resources either helped them find their way into the kingdom or did something that changed their life significantly. With respect to the kingdom. And so it's a dramatic idea that Christians just don't think very well about. All right. So I'm living in Dallas, and we have this these friends of ours, for me and Vicky, Joel and Jessica. They were from the Midwest. This hardworking, really smart, talented folks. They became some of our best friends. She was a believer. He was not. You know, in the Midwest mentality, it's just really salt of the earth. I mean, he would wear a Cleveland Browns shirt when the Browns weren't in Cleveland. Okay, they left. They were done. And I was like, bro, you can't wear a shirt for a team that doesn't exist. He goes, we are coming back. You can believe it. Sure enough. I mean, finally, after years, I had to call him and go, all right, bro, you're right. You're back. Good job. I was like, way to believe. All right. It's just the salt of the earth mentality. It was just incredible. And But, you know, we spent years with them, and they're good friends of ours. But he, for his spiritual struggle, was really hard for him. And I've shared this story a couple times. And they were down here a couple years ago, and we were laughing about some of these stories. But we are downtown at the sixth floor looking at JFK, where JFK was shot one night. We're on kind of a couple's date, and we're talking. If you've ever been to Dallas, and you're down there, and you're hanging out where the limousine was and where the shooting was, there'll be guys that'll hang out down there. And what they'll do is they'll corner you. And they'll start telling you the story, and they'll tell you the conspiracy story, and they'll tell you one of 10 conspiracy stories, and they're engaging, they're fascinating, they're incredible. They'll tell you the story, and before long you are totally sucked into it. And so they'll go for about 15 minutes, and they'll take you over here, and they'll show you this, and they'll show you that, and they'll explain all this stuff to you, and you're just like, oh my gosh, our government, they killed our president. All right, so, and then when he's all done, he'll be like, that's a good one. He goes, I mean, could you help a man out for, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20 bucks, something like that? It was a good story, wasn't it? And so you feel obligated to give the 10 bucks, right? So there was a guy starting to do that. But we've already had this done before. So a guy's starting to do that. And I'm like, well, I already know all the conspiracy stories. I watched the movie. I'm good. I'm not giving you 10 bucks. And Joel steps up and he goes, non-believer, right? He goes, hey, here's the thing. Hold on. He goes, hold on, Matt. And he looks at the guy. He goes, here's what we're going to do. He goes, he pulls out. He goes, I got $10. He goes, I'm going to give you this $10 when he gets done talking. And I'm standing here and I was like, okay. He goes, all right, tell him. And I said, tell him what? He goes, that gospel thing you're always telling me. Tell him. Okay. Here's the gospel. And so I tell him the gospel. And the guy goes, looks at him, Joel goes, you got that? He goes, yeah, I got it. He goes, all right, there's 10 bucks. He goes, you'd be good to listen to him. All right, go on. Good. It was the most awkward, weird thing I have ever been a part of my whole life. But here's what this non-Christian thought about spiritual things. As he's on his spiritual journey, trying to figure it out, not clear, struggling. He just thought, I mean, he did. They had great jobs. He's like, I got money. He goes, he's always telling me the gospel. This guy probably needs to hear it. I'll just pay this guy 10 bucks to listen to Matt. Now, I'm under no illusions. This guy walked away. I mean, he walked away going, that's the easiest 10 bucks I ever made. But the concept behind that was immediately evident to a non-Christian, that was never evident to me, is that there's a way to use resources that can have an impact on people if we were to think about it in a clever way or a clear way, right? Verse 10, Jesus says this. He goes, if you're faithful in little things, you'll be faithful in large things. And it's interesting. Here we go. This is more the reflective side, right? That money is a big deal, right? We spend it every day. We spend money somewhere every day. We could tell you how much we're going to spend next month. It's all over the place. And our hearts are connected to it, either for status or for security. We are connected to it. We think about it. We think about it in ways we don't even think we think about it. We feel things that we don't even understand about it, right? So it's a big thing. And Jesus says it's a big thing. But here, he says it's a little thing. And notice the context, though. If you're faithful in little things, like earthly money, then he goes, what will we do? He goes, then you'll be faithful in larger things. So as big as money is, there's this other context compared to eternal things and some future reward and future responsibility. Compared to that, he says money's actually a little thing. So it's a big thing. He goes, but it's interesting in this context, he'll say it's actually a little thing. Notice this. And then the words change. Faithful versus dishonest. But if you are dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. You're like, well, what are the greater responsibilities? We don't know. Jesus talks about it all the time. He talks about crowns and rewards and rulership and ruling and being in the kingdom and being in heaven. He's talking about these concepts all the time. And there's something there that's huge, that's big, that's large, future responsibilities, future something. But we don't know what it is. But he talks about it all the time. If you're dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. And as it turns out, just like Matthew 25, we find out what? That money is a test. Money is a test for my heart. While the owner is away, I'm supposed to be a manager. When he comes back, he says, since I wasn't here, you got to do whatever you wanted. So how you handled your resources, how you handled your money, exhibited and displayed and portrayed exactly what was in your heart. Exactly what was in your heart. And it's a test for something greater or smaller. Verse 11. And if you are untrustworthy about worldly wealth, who will trust you with what? Here it is again. The greater riches of heaven, which are what? We don't know. But here's what Jesus is saying. He's saying you have to look at what you have in your hands and you have to say, how much is this worth to me today? Versus how much would it be worth to me in 500 years? Like, well, I'm not going to be in 500 years. Right. This is his point. A guy named Jim Collins wrote a book a number of years ago called Good to Great. And he took 15 companies that were good, and he took 15 companies that were really great, and they did all these years of research with all these grad students, and they compared the good companies to the great companies, and they found that some of these companies that became great, it wasn't just mystical or supernatural, that there were some tangible reasons why some companies moved to a whole nother level than other companies. And he boiled it down to maybe a handful of issues. And he said, these are some things that you will see in these great companies. And here's what happens right around the turning point when they take off and all that. Okay. But here's what he did. He goes, if we put all the, and in the beginning of the book, he says, if we put all the great companies that we said, these 15 companies together and create, put them in a mutual fund that, and you put a dollar in at the beginning of 15 years and you tracked your $1 for the course of 15 years, he goes, you get a $471 return. I mean, multiply that by $1,000 or by $10,000. I mean, it's millions. Okay. So the return is incredible. Right. And so what you'd have to do is, if you had that possibility, he's just using it as an illustration. But here's the idea, is that you would look at your $1 today and you go, how much is it worth to me today? Well, it's worth a dollar. Or these $10, what's it worth? It's worth $10 today. What will it be worth in 15 years? It'd be worth thousands of dollars. And so you got to weigh today versus what this is going to be worth sometime in the future. And this is what Jesus is saying. You got to weigh what this money's worth to you today versus what it's going to be worth to you a long time in the future. Because the reality is, nobody in this room is going to be alive in 100 years. In 150 years, even 125 years, there's going to be almost no memory of you. In 150 years, there's not going to be any memory of you. And we're going to have great-great-grandchildren going, I mean, I think his name, see, is Matt and Vicky. And they did a church. He was a pastor. And great-great-grandchildren are going to be like, all right. Something about a church. I'm like, oh, it's only my whole life. Okay, all right. It's only my whole life here. But in just a short while, we're going to be forgotten. And all the things that we worried about yesterday are going to be forgotten. They're going to be gone. And so Jesus is saying, I'm trying to open your eyes to the fact that all this is a very short window for you. It's a very short window. It's a very unique opportunity that only lasts for a very short amount of time. And you have to ask yourself, how much is that money worth to you today versus what it's going to be worth 100 years from now or 1,000 years from now? Not in a physical mutual fund that Wall Street, who we can't trust with, not that they're going to handle, he says, but that I'm going to handle. That you're going to use that money for a spiritual impact that's going to have an impact that's going to go on for all of eternity. Verse 12. And if you're not faithful with other people's things, why should you be trusted with things of your own? Once again, these riches in heaven, you're a manager now. I'm going to make you an owner later on. No one can serve two masters. We've seen this. For you will hate the one and you will love the other. You'll be devoted to one. You'll despise the other. You can't serve God and money too. He says, some of us, we're intuitively want to say, here's my God stuff and here's my money stuff. And I'm going to go over here and work on my God stuff right now. And then later on, I'll work on my money stuff. And so it's Sunday, so it's God stuff. And now Monday, it's money stuff. And he goes, it doesn't work like that. He goes, these two are connected and one will ride over the other. So God's going to ride over money, or money's going to ride. Someone's going to be God in this relationship, but not both, and they're not going to be equal. And it comes back to here's what we were saying a couple weeks ago. All financial decisions are spiritual decisions. whether I'm going to Lowe's, buying a house, buying a car, paying off debt, going into debt, taking out a business loan, whatever it is I'm doing, going on vacation, whatever, new car, used car, whatever. Every financial decision is a spiritual decision because you can't serve God and money too. And so Jesus is calling us to be generous. And there's two motivations for being generous. One is the purity of the gospel, which we'll talk about in a couple of weeks. But the other one is this. It's this idea of reward. And so there's a guy that was big in this. He mentored me in this. And so I graduated from seminary and we're talking about it one day. I said, it just feels to me like you're saying that you give. He's been very successful. I was like, you give because you get a reward out of it. He goes, well, that is one of the reasons that I give. And I said, but it just feels utilitarian. It feels like you're getting a reward. And he goes, you've been to seminary. Did you read the Bible? He goes, have you spent much time reading it? And he started walking me through all these passages, right? I'm the one with the degree. And he's going, look at what Jesus says. Look at what Jesus says. Look at what Jesus says. And Jesus is very clear about this. And so Jesus calls us to be generous because we can take something that's little right now and do something huge with it that's going to be huge for eternity. Let me give you some examples, okay? Because some of you are going, I need some examples. Let me give you some examples of things that we already do, that we know people do, that we do as a church, that people do individually. Boxes of love at Thanksgiving. We give a little bit of money and we provide a couple meals for a family that can't afford that. Okay, so you're taking something that's little and you're having an impact on someone's like, well, I don't know if they heard the gospel. Well, actually, we know that they did hear the gospel. But even if they didn't hear the gospel, we're still having an impact and we're doing something that's generous, that's outside of ourselves, that God can use, that God can honor. They can have an impact that goes beyond what we can understand. When we adopt a child for Christmas, we're providing something physical for them that can soften their heart to who Christians are, to the churches, to who God is. When we buy books or backpacks for kids at Montevue that can't afford them, okay, we're taking something that we have right now and we're trying to have an internal impact with it. We have people who support Compassion International. One of our gals has supported this boy for 20 years and now he's a pastor in Africa, right? And so she's followed him. They correspond and email all the time. When we reach out to someone who's in the middle of a crisis and we just jump in and say, financially, they need our help. We're going to jump in. They're a friend. They're a neighbor. We help someone who's in transition. When we take someone and say, I mean, I need to build a relationship with this person at work, and so I'm going to take them to lunch. That's going to cost you something. It's going to cost you time. It's going to cost you money. You're going to reach out. You're going to build that relationship. You're going to take them to lunch. When you buy someone a book, say, here's a book. I mean, you were asking some questions about this the other day. We were talking about this. Here's a book that I've read. No, it's free. Just take it. You go, I mean, yeah, I'm taking a few dollars that I have right now, trying to turn it into something spiritual to have a spiritual impact ongoing. When I pay for an experience for someone to be able to hear the gospel, when you open your home and you have someone for dinner, I mean, that is not free. Or one of the things that God's done with us is that we have people live with us periodically, which is not inexpensive, I've noticed, right? And so, but it gives us a ministry opportunity. It costs us something. But what an opportunity to be able to help somebody, all right, to help change their future. When we support a missionary, I can't go for whatever reason. I can't go where they can go, but they're going. I get to be a part of that. I have a friend that was a missionary in China for 10 years and now is in Greece. Hard times in Greece, right? But he did do 10 years in China. I give him that, right? But he's done things I could never do. He can speak languages I can't speak. He put time and energy and sweat into learning a culture and learning the language and doing things that I cannot do, did not do. But because we have supported him from the beginning, I get to be a part. We get to be a part of what he's done. And so when I look back and I go, well, how much would that money every month have meant to me then? It would have meant something. But I got a feeling it's going to mean a whole lot more in the future, that I'm going to meet people that he impacted and be like, oh, yeah, I have a part of that. Right? It's the great thing about resources. They can do things that we just can't even get your mind around. Short-term mission trips. We have people who go all the time and we help support them. Give to the church. And lots of people say, well, I mean, you give to church and you got, well, you know, what is all this? Well, we're discipling over 1,000 children, hundreds of high school students. And so we do have to have some buildings for that. We do ministry on this campus. We do ministry off of this campus in Greenville, in Allendale, the poorest county in our state. Average household income is $10,000. Allendale County, and then Africa and Bahamas, Nicaragua. And so when we rally our resources together, we're able to have a spiritual impact. And so, I mean, it just goes on in all kinds of directions. So I had a friend also who said, he called years ago after we started the church. He said, what are you doing to record your sermons? I was like, well, we record them, but they just, you know, we don't do anything with it. We're just saving them archived so I can, when I get 80, I can listen to them and see how good the preaching was. And he said, here's what let's do. He goes, what you need to do is you need to duplicate them, you know, make tapes of them. It's tapes. It was a thing that we used to do. Tapes. And then give them out. I was like, a tape duplicator costs $1,100. We just started a church. We don't have $1,100. He's like, I got it. I'm going to send you a check. He goes, you go ahead and order it. He goes, I'm going to send you a check. And because here's what I'm going to do. You want to make tapes and you want to give them out to people in your congregation so that they can give them out to other people to get the word out about what God is doing and they can hear the Bible being taught. And I said, now, why would you do that? He goes, because I want to be a part of something. He goes, I got this money and I'd like to take it and translate it into something that can have an eternal impact. Right? And so our church, and not just our church, but all churches and ministries are built on that kind of thinking. All right, so it's what we're calling our body to. Now, we got some challenges because we got some debt that hangs over us. And when we have debt who hangs over us, it limits our ability to do ministry. But we at least need a vision from Jesus that says, here's how you should be using your resources. I want to introduce you to an idea that we're rolling out this weekend. We started something called Nishah. All right. And so I think we have a slide. I can show you just the introductory slide. This will be on a website that you'll have some access to. And we took a passage from Exodus. It says, if you lend money to one of my people who is needy, do not do it like a money lender. Don't charge interest. The idea is that it's always been at God's heart to use resources to help people. Okay. And to not oppress them, but to help them. You go, well, in this debt, well, this is not consumer debt. Okay. This is when we're not using interest to burden someone. We're using resources to help them and they can pay that back. All right. So we've been working behind the scenes. Jeff Randolph's been leading the effort on this, identifying people through connections with other ministries in town where we can find people that we can help. All right. And we want to provide opportunities for our body, not everybody. Everybody's got different causes they're involved in. This will just become one, but an opportunity for people in our body to jump in and make small loans, $10, $20, $50, $100, make loans to people to help them either start a business or expand the business that they're in so that they can kind of move forward in life. And instead of having to take, they can become producers. They can become givers. And so we're helping, we want to shepherd them, help disciple them to whatever degree we can with business plan, working on reducing costs, working on margin, some of those kinds of issues, marketing, all of that. And so our first entrepreneur, I want to show you in just a second, is a gal named Chancey. And so we're going to show you part of her story, but she is the first one. We just want to introduce this idea to you, and then you'll have an opportunity. Jeff Randolph's going to come up at the end, explain some more about it, but maybe something you want to be a part of. So let's roll the video. Let me show you what we've been working on.
I got involved in powdered cocaine. I began to sniff it because that was the end thing to do. And it totally devastated my life. I lost interest in any and almost everything that was important to me. I lost my self-esteem, my self-image. All I wanted to do was smoke crack cocaine. And it had gotten to the point where it was very expensive. So you try and figure out a way to make it easier on yourself. And for me, that was selling it. So I began to sell crack cocaine. And not only did I sell it, I also used it. In fact, I was probably my best customer, sad to say. But that's where I was. Now, I've done my time, and I thought, you know, and while I was in prison, I got saved. I knew that it was about the Lord Jesus and not about me, but I had my mind clear at this time, and I decided that when I got out of prison, that I was going to go back to school and get my nursing degree. And because when you get a pardon in South Carolina, it allows you to get a job, which requires you to have license. I thought, but that's not the case in South Carolina. I came home one day and got a phone call on my voice machine telling me that I was not to go back to clinicals the next day until I talked to the dean of nursing. I thought, oh, okay, I made the dean's list. But no, that wasn't what it was about. They was letting me know that I was not to go back to clinicals to practice nursing because the hospital system would not accept my pardon. But by the grace of God, I found a way out with banana bread. This is the only way that I can see getting my life back and giving back to the community. The neighbors who I had shared this bread with, they was ordering loaves from me to give out as Christmas gifts, to give to her husband's employees. And that's when I really saw the potential in my banana bread. Word of mouth, it began to spread, and I began to take orders, and I began to bake it out of my kitchen. My kitchen at home. But to get this out in other areas like Liquid Highway, I would love to get it in Liquid Highway and a Starbucks and Bilo. It overwhelms my kitchen. I need bigger space. I needed a certified kitchen to work from. Just because I have access to this commercial kitchen does not mean I could just start my business. I need a commercial mixer. I need racks, pans, insurance. I need certain permits. To get up and running, to just get a little bit of a head start, I would need, I'm going to say at least $4,000. The money that I make selling these loaves is how I pay my bills, is how I feed my family, is how I'm able to survive. This is the only way that I can see getting my life back and giving back to the community.
All right, it's just part of a really cool story that we've been working with Chancey, Jeff Randolph, Mike Collins, Sherry Taylor, working with Chancey behind the scenes. To help get us to this place. And this is one of a number of entrepreneurs that we want to put in front of you in the course of a year and give you an opportunity to respond to. And so we're excited about this. And so it'll be a deal where you can just go online and you can see the story, read the story. You can click on it and you can donate a small amount or a large amount as you want to. If that's what you feel like God's calling you to do, it's going to be a great opportunity for our body going forward. Jeff's going to come up and talk about more of that in a minute. Let me put us back and get us ready for worship, all right? Here's some questions I want to put in front of you. I want you to think through this. Think about what Jesus said, the limited time we have, how we use our resources. Here's the first question. Who will welcome you into heaven? In other words, who's going to say, look, I'm here, or you're part of the process of how I got here? Or here's the impact that you had on my life because you took some of your resources, which you knew you were going to lose anyway, and you invested them in the kingdom and it went towards me. So who could you think of that's going to be impacted by how you've used your money and how you've used your resources? And then that's long term, eternal. But even right now, whose life is better right now because of the way you use your money? Whose life is better because of the way you use your resources? Because from Genesis all the way to the end of the book, it has never been about that all the resources that come to us were meant for us. Everything that comes towards me is not meant for me. Everything that comes towards you is not meant for you. That's not how it works. Which leads me to the last question, is that are you a compelling vehicle for God? If he said, I need to spread some resources, I need to channel some resources to some people, would he bring it to you? Would he say, this is a steward, this is a manager that I can trust. I've given them this, look how faithful they've been. I'm going to give them more so they can go be a blessing to some other people. I want to bless that person, but I want to use this person to do it. Would your name be on that list? Or does God look at you and go, I mean, everything you give to that person, it's all for them. I mean, they don't channel anything to anybody else. I mean, those are some hard questions, but what, you know, whose life's better now? Who would welcome me into their eternal dwellings, like Jesus says? And then would God choose to use me to be a blessing to other people? All right. It means we got to deal with what's going on in our hearts, of how we use our resources, what they mean to us. If we have debt, we got to keep dealing with that. We got to say, you know, what are the steps that I have to take to deal with my personal debt? Let's pray. Let's ask God to bless our time together. Father, we pray that you would continue to help us do the hard work of moving our body to a place where we would be generous, courageously generous, where we would not be afraid of what we lose or whether you're going to take care of us or not. We just know you're going to take care of us. And so, Father, even though we've made dumb decisions, we've made a lot of mistakes with our resources, that you would show us a path forward out of that, that you would show us how to use our resources wisely, that we'd find a way to be a blessing to those in our neighborhood, in our workplace, through the church, to someone like Chancey, to people walking in all different aspects of life. The opportunities that you put in front of us to move resources towards people that we can be a blessing to others and not make it all about us. We ask that you give us a vision for that. Your grace would be strong on us in Jesus' name.